cliffcentral.com.
Very good. Yes, and if you haven't subscribed yet to the MKT show, to Cliff Central Sport, do that on YouTube today. And while we're talking about subscriptions, we haven't done this yet this morning. I know that Lebang's probably a professional at this. Won't you do the whole like and subscribe to this channel thing for me, please? Because I'm crap at it and I always forget. No, I'm terrible. And then I get chat on because I've forgotten to do it. So here it is. This morning, we have Lebang Khosana with us, and she is going to tell us what you need to do if you haven't done it already. It doesn't help to just watch us or listen to us live.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into the channel. So all you need to do is hit the subscribe button every single morning from 6 to 8. It's the cliffcentral.com show. It's the morning. You know, I just let you know everything about our lives. So hit like, hit subscribe, and please hit the notifications button so every time I get a video, you can see it first. Okay, love you. Bye.
That's perfect. That's exactly, you have got those, you've got those YouTubers down.
It.
Watch a lot of YouTube.
Bye.
That's awesome.
Bye.
Bye. That's perfect. All right. So first of all, in the first hour this morning, we had a little video of a guy playing this very bizarre instrument, and I'm going to play it again just so you can you can hear it and see what it is, and pay no attention to the caption, by the way. But this is hilarious, and I found out what it is thanks to one of our listeners. Look at this. So there it is. So according to Good Stuff, the instrument in the fingering meme, his name is Stefan Popescu, and the instrument is called a digifonf.
Digifonf.
That's what it's called. It's a finger flute from Romania, of all places. So there we are. You see, you learn something new every day. I love that thing. That's fantastic. That would be a great ad for lube, says Tracy. Exactly right.
Got new lube? Don't know what to do with it?
Exactly. That's beautiful. Oh, man. All right. So listen, we've got some cool stuff coming up. In just a short while, we talk to John Foster Pedley, who is, of course, the dean and the director of Henley Business School here in South Africa. And he's the dean for the whole of Africa. And we're going to talk about the new currency in the world, which is hope, because that is in short supply at the moment. People are feeling very down about the world. People are dealing with coronavirus and losing jobs and riots and lockdowns and looting. And, you know, John Foster Pedley, who he could live in the UK. I mean, I've been to Henley Business School at Henley, and it's an amazing place. He could be there, but he believes in this continent, and he believes that we've got incredible talent and incredible opportunity here, and we're going to find out why. He says hope is our new currency, and he'll explain to us what that means. That's coming up a little bit later on. It's always good to hear from people who have something really positive to add to our lives, especially when so many people are feeling very, very down. So we'll speak to John Foster Pedley a little bit later on. We're joined this morning by Lebang Khosana, who's here. She's in the starring role this morning as one of our guests today. And she's popped in because I met her the other day while we were doing it was like a lecture, an online lecture for people from all over the world. Yeah. Who wanted to talk about radio and about podcasting. And Lebang impressed me so much, I thought we've got to have her on the show and introduce her to you so that you can see what she's all about. She's also a mother of four, which to me is even more impressive than anything she did in, you know, radio. That's really, that is some hard work. How old are you?
Gareth, you're downplaying it. Gareth, you're downplaying it. I feel like I definitely shot my shot to be here. Sure, you like me. You were like, yeah, cool. Yeah. I had to email this man, guys. Yeah. I had to email him, literally let my guard down and send this like long ass thing explaining why I deserve to be here and why I want to be. It was like really like humbling because I don't slide into the DMs often. But that day I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And I did it. And here we are, et voila. So shout out to you guys for actually hitting me up, man.
Someone much smarter than me once told me that if you don't ask, you don't get. And people don't ask. I mean, you know, that you can call it a hustle or you can call it a chutzpah, you can call it whatever you want, but people who don't ask for things, never get them, and then they wonder why they go, oh, shame. As if they expect that other person to just kind of out of the blue pull their name and give them a chance. If you don't ask, the worst that can happen is someone says no. I mean,
exactly, and you've lost nothing.
You've lost nothing.
At least you've tried.
You're back where you started. So if you don't, if you don't throw that out there and you don't ask people, you're never going to know. Just give it a try.
Exactly.
So
it's like the power of the universe as well. Just like, you know, attracted. Mulela, I heard you earlier. You're like dragging people that believe in crystals, the chakra hands and the chakra gens. But it applies here, bro. It's the power of the universe. You know, if you're just attracted, it'll come to you.
So especially if you're a Libra.
We've learned a lot about you this morning. Please, Mbulelo, don't start your shit. So we've learned a lot about Lebang this morning. We learned that she has a cousin who's not being honest about how much money he owes, and he's about to get married. We also found out that she supported a friend in business, and she's still waiting for that friend to deliver, and it's starting to embarrass her because she's got a reputation to uphold in terms of service delivery, and now she's being held back by her friend. So she may not be spending money with local small friends' businesses anymore because she's been burned. But there's
also this is some way to tell both people.
Like, I know
to put them on the spot.
I have a feeling you're just using our show to get back at these people who disagree with you or let you down.
I've been struggling because how do I confront them? I guess like the friend who I'm doing business with, it's been easier because that's like, you know, call a spade, you're doing shit. But I haven't been able to speak to my cousin for like maybe like 2 months. I can't WhatsApp him because his fiance checks out his WhatsApps. I can't email him.
I can't call him. Stop there.
This is the only time I'm speaking about it. I swear to God, I can't speak to him.
Sorry. You just triggered me right now.
Oh, here we go.
What are you talking about? She checks his WhatsApps. Let's deal with why is he marrying her? Why is he marrying this person now? What are we doing there?
It's quite clear he's broke and she's not. So that's why he's marrying her.
They belong together. They belong together because he, you know what? Which means you will get what you want.
What you want.
So the worst thing, so they deserve each other because he's a deceptive monster and now she's also a control freak.
It makes sense, right?
They deserve each other.
I don't think I just want to correct you on something.
He puts himself on loudspeaker. Like, it's crazy.
I don't think that saying is you'll get what you want. You'll get what you deserve is probably what it is. Because that's what's going on here. These two deserve each other.
It's crazy. I can't even speak to him. So I'm hoping he's listening so that he knows how I truly feel. And it's really hurting me because I just want to tell him to run. Run, bro, run. But it's too late.
So there's another story that you have. And I'm sorry I have to be the one that brings this up because I was hoping you would. But you've had to cancel a family member recently. Now, we all talk about cancel culture and how bad it is. But we're all canceling people on an individual basis in life. You kind of, you know, a friend does exactly what this one friend has let you down and then they haven't delivered in business. So you're going to have to cancel them, at least in business. You might still be able to see them at parties and things and be friendly, but you're not going to be able to work with them again. And if your cousin does end up making the right decision and either being honest and telling this girl and then she leaves him, you're probably canceling her. You're never going to see her again, right? So you do this. Everybody does this on a daily basis or on a weekly or a monthly or even annually. You go through a list. And I do this on social media too. I look at the people who I'm friends with. It's a horrible thing to say, but I usually do it on their birthday because their birthdays, then it's a small group of people. So you can bite it off in small chunks. And I look at all the birthdays for that day and I'm like, I haven't actually seen or spoken to or thought about this person for months. I think I'll just unfriend them. And then you move very quickly on to doing that. So we all do this it doesn't always have to be malice. But when you cancel a family member, that's a fairly big deal because they're mostly unavoidable, aren't they?
No, 100%. I think it's also just sadder because it cuts way deeper. As you're saying, if it's like someone maybe just a friend that you haven't spoken to in a while, you can just block, delete. Sure. And lovely, Facebook is so great because it just reminds you, hey, it's Susan's birthday from 12 years ago. Do you still chat to her? And you're like, fuck no. Unblock, unfollow. You're just not there for that. But when it's a family member, you know, and like this is either a cousin, a sibling, a parent, it's more like a psychological thing now where it's like, I need to choose my piece. And it's going to come at a cost. And right now, the cost is to cut ties with you for real, for real. And it's not easy and it's not nice. And I tweeted it yesterday and I was surprised at how many people actually go through it. When you actually get to a point where you are hurtful, you know, when you just, your chin, you're just up to here and you just don't know what to do anymore, whether it's because you've got a narcissistic family member who's just, you're drowning in this terrible energy, or you just keep getting done dirty, or if somebody in your family is always asking you for money and that's the only reason why you guys talk, or you're possibly just confronting something that has been, you know, pushed under the rug growing up. It could be a traumatic experience, and you're finally, you have the kahunas to be like, look, family member, I didn't like what you did, and this is how it made me feel. And they just kind of dismiss you.
Then it's
that
time.
Point, you're like, you know what? I'm out.
To get rid of you.
Peace. Well, you know,
I'm not going to ask about the detail of how this one happened, because maybe it's personal, but you know, the fact is, like, we all have reasons to dump people along the way. And, you know, whether it's at work, whether it's in families, or whether it's friends, that's really up to you. I mean, listen to this story. This is someone who I feel very sorry for. Sun Marie says, I just canceled a friend whose child shat all over our guest bathroom, and she left half of it for me to clean. Fuck that. I mean, that is a good reason to cancel someone, if you ask me. The child shat all over the guest bathroom.
That is quite funny. Okay, firstly, Sun Marie, you need better friends, because, like, if my child shits in my best friend's guest bathroom, I'm cleaning that shit up. I'm cleaning that shit up.
Your child.
And if you're a real friend, I mean, you hold them up with me. You know, some friends will be willing to also get their elbows in the grease. I mean, we're all in it together, man. You need better friends, Sun Marie. Come on.
Well, wow. Tracy says she has no problem cutting friends off. So long. Bye now. I wish them well, and I move right on. See?
Yeah.
Good for her.
That's a very good point. And then Carl says, you must see the good in this. She did clean up half of the shit. So a silver lining kind of guy. That's great. Yanni says, fuck that. If she leaves the shit for me to clean, there is no way she's welcome in my place again. You know, back in the days when we used to do, you know, lots more social stuff, and I would invite people to my house and we'd have huge big parties, and there were always a couple of rules. Number one, don't break anything, because I didn't invite you into my house to show zero respect for my things, right? So don't break things. Second of all, do not throw up. You don't, if you can't control yourself as an adult and you don't know what your limits are, then rather not, just decline the invitation. Say you can't come. And it hasn't happened a lot that people have broken things. One or two things have obviously there's, you know, been something that was in the way, or something was knocked over by mistake, and that kind of thing happens. But generally messy people I can't handle. Like, don't create a whole tornado around you. If you can't behave yourself, rather just stay at home. Don't come.
Do you guys know? Do you know any well-behaved person that is A, willing to admit that they are not well-behaved, and B, is going to say no to a house party? Come on, guys.
No, you're exactly
I've hosted
right.
multiple house parties in my years, and I've seen the worst of it. There was a guy who, like, pissed in my mom's pot, like a pot plant thing, and there was a girl twerking on my roof,
and
there was a guy who tried to plank on the roof and ended up falling into the yard. And yeah, look, I've obviously deleted all of that information off Facebook because I'm embarrassed about that part of my life. But I don't know any person that is not sane to say, Gareth, thank you for inviting me to your house party. But unfortunately, I'm not sane, so I'm not going to come. They're the first nigga at the door, man. They're the first people there because they know they had to fuck shit up.
You're right.
Like, let's be real. Let's be real. Like, they know themselves so well. They're like, you know what? I'm here to do one thing and one thing only, and that's fuck shit up, and they're going to do it. They're going to do it.
So basically, you're telling me it's up to me to cancel them before that happens.
Absolutely. For sure. Like, if you're smart, you need to be responsible for your own crib. Oh, at that point, when you're allowing people into your personal space, you are no longer in control. It's their house.
Right. I'm totally with you on a very serious note. In my house, no smoking, no drinking in my house, right? I don't care what if people want to come and express themselves in my life, do that at home, Chief. Because in my house, my house is a house of health, and I have people who've had a problem with this, and I've subsequently had to say, well, here's the door, and it happened in this happened for real, real was here's the door. I'm not here to negotiate with you in my personal life. Sorry. So I love what you're saying there is we can express ourselves outside at your house, at your mom's house, at your side boyfriend's house. Not yet. Here we don't drink.
Boyfriend.
Yeah, here we side here we gonna be constructive. Well,
tell us small. Hey,
no, there's dynamics. No, people have things. I'm just saying what's happening in real life.
They
do. Everyone just presumes people have one boyfriend, and I think that's very limiting and sexist. You know, women can.
Also they aren't just side chicks; they're also side boyfriends. Yeah,
and that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah,
I'm trying to.
Yeah, side, are you saying side dick? Okay, that's what you call it.
Right? I'm saying it. I was just like, how much can I swear on this show?
We're a free platform. You can say whatever you like. So Therence says, narcissist family members are the worst. Yeah, and then,
fuck balls.
How can you tell? Is it the first 5 minutes? Because I can usually tell quite quickly if someone is. Carol says the same thing, that they're the absolute worst. Again, Yanni says, I don't need people like that. I always bought her alcohol when we went out. This is the girl who let him down. You've got to know when to cut people loose. You know, it's a real skill. And some people are really good at it, and some people just can't let go easily. They think it's almost like a sunken cost situation. In business, they talk about how once you've invested in something and it doesn't go well, you've put so much into it already that you are afraid to take your money out again, or afraid to quit or disinvest yourself or be uninvolved because you've put so much in already. And the same goes for relationships. You could build a relationship with someone for like 10 years and they really let you down badly, and it's justifiable for you to get out. And some people just won't get out because they have that sunken cost problem. Like, I can't leave this because I haven't finished here yet. I've still got so much invested in this person. That is exactly where you get hurt. That is precisely where things go really, really badly wrong for you.
You know what? I come from two polar opposites at home. Is my mother is empath to almost sympathetic level. My dad only speaks once. Like, so they know in the family because he's put a lot of his sisters and brother through university, and it's just a whole story. But he only speaks once. They know with him he is. So even with us is like him and I, we clash because in my 20s, as I said, I was a drunken delinquent. And so he speaks once. And if you don't listen, his thing is, if you show me who you are the first time, I believe you. He believes you the first time. And my dad is an extremist in that sense, and my mom's the other side. So you're 100% right. And as I get older, I'm learning from my father the lessons I didn't think I'd ever know. Is as soon as you show me who you are the first time, I'm not a romantic. Okay, excellent. Now I know where we stand. Let's do that.
No, you've said this, and I don't disagree. I think that's a very good point. Okay, so a couple of people jumping in here. Simba says the worst is when close people feel entitled to invade your space unannounced.
Yes.
Oh, guys.
Yes. Whoa. I'm at the gate.
My space is your space. My space is your space.
So you don't mind.
One band, one sound.
You don't mind that.
No, man. Like, I think boundaries are very key, but also we must like suss out the environment. Like, there's certain people who I know I can just rock up because we tight like that. Because you haven't put up that boundary. Not that I'm going to abuse it, but like, you've never complained in the past. So I'm going to keep doing that. And now you're dating and I rock up and you're like, oh, Trummy, why didn't you call me? Since when do I need to call you?
So I've got
because now you've got a man.
So I've got a good situation here, and I can always blame other people for it because you can't get to my house unless I've sent you like a code for the gate. So you can't arrive unannounced at my house. I mean, family can because they can get in, right? But anybody else, if I don't invite you, you can't come in. And it's actually a really useful system because I can always blame, you were driving right past, I wasn't at home, or because sometimes you don't want to see people, right? We're all like that. Some days you don't want to see people, some days you don't want people pitching up unannounced. Leave me alone on a Sunday, for example. Do not bother me. Sundays are my day to recharge. I don't want to see anyone unless I choose to see you. Doesn't matter how much I like you, Sunday's not for you. And if I do invite people, I already know they're coming before they arrive. So that's
I love what you're saying. I love what you're saying because you know who the real douchebags are? Is the people that make you explain yourself when you go, no, I'm busy. Oh, but how come? Oh, you never want... Hey, man.
Boundaries, you know, bro.
Get an owl. If you need, yeah, get an owl. Get an owl because they take a long time to train if you need something to do. You know what I mean? I must be now because I'm very old. I'm a whole old man now. I can't be explaining myself to you what I'm doing in my personal life.
How old are you?
I don't care how much I love you.
He's so old.
35.
Mentally, he's like
you
six,
definitely
seven.
Look 23.
Mentally, he's very old.
Oh, well. Sorry. I'm closer and 35. So we don't age the same. People must realize this.
Okay, Pharrell.
Guys, I don't know if he's taking the piss here, but this is hilarious. So Carl says, it all boils down to aesthetics. My ex was extremely good looking, but she slept with my dad. I forgave her because she was hot. An ugly staff member ate some of my biltong, so I cancelled her. Lol.
you know what? I love that. I used to have a Russian football coach when I was younger, and she used to tell me the model in life. Production tolerance. So if you are producing at a high level, we'll tolerate more craziness, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're more talented, so if you're hotter, we'll tolerate more, right? So I'm with that guy there. It's called production tolerance.
So
that's what life is.
And she was a female Russian coach.
Yeah. She was our strength and conditioning coach at Tottenham.
And how did she talk? Did she have the accent?
She did, she had the British, like Russian thing.
If you bring production, we will tolerate. But you don't bring production, we not tolerate. And if you want us to tolerate and you are bullshit, we are bullshit person.
Give us
500,000.
Yeah, it's not your
days.
Bullshit person.
I give you three
it's
days.
It's the vibe.
Yeah. That's what we've learned today. It's great. Oh, man. Simba agrees with me. All my friends, he says, know about Simba Sundays. I do not interact with any humans unless there is a special occasion. Boundaries. That's exactly right. A lot of other people feel like that about Sundays. People call them vampire Sundays, apparently. That's what I saw here. Somebody says, yeah, that's my day. Yeah, Sunmarie, she says, Sunday's vampire day. So you don't want people sucking up your energy on a Sunday. That's your day to recharge. That's certainly the case for me. Like to get me to leave the house on a Sunday, you have to, that's an uphill battle. Hey, you're pushing a rock because it's just not, first of all, I want to sleep late on a Sunday. It's the one day I get to lie in bed and I'm not really that interested in people by the end of the week. I'm getting ready for people again on the Monday. So leave me alone. That's the day I'll watch some series or I'll eat food that's bad for me or I'll not do any exercise. That's a day of being a slob. Leave me alone to do it.
Yeah. You just want to dissolve on the couch. Okay. Honestly, that's like what Sundays are for.
Thank God for this. Carl says he was taking the piss with that story. It was all fiction about the girl sleeping with his dad.
But it's a good model. It still works.
We like that.
Is it?
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. All right. Very, very good. Robbie says, my house receives more unwanted visitors than a KZN macro during a protest.
Oh, Robbie, too soon. Too soon.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Y'all are cold.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go to John Foster Pedley in a moment. We're going to find out what he's up to and how he believes hope is the world's new currency. John Foster Pedley is well known to our audiences here on cliffcentral.com as the Dean and the Director of Henley Business School in Africa. John, how are you?
Great, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly. Loud and clear. Whereabouts are you? Are you at home?
I'm at home in my little study getting up in the morning. But what a boost to listen to you guys. I mean, it's just been amazing.
I'm definitely hopeful
after listening to you.
Well, your study looks like a game lodge. It's fantastic. I love the look of that place. It's awesome. Nice to see you.
It's actually the loft over the garage there. You know, the plant put in there. It looked like it's something good.
That'll work. So, John, first of all, nice to see you again. How's Henley doing? Right. You guys haven't stopped through the pandemic. I know you've been keeping on, keeping on. And, you know, education in this country has changed so much. There's so much to talk about there. Before we get into hope being the new currency, give us an update on what's happening with Henley.
Well, we went into, we went into virtual education before lockdown, thank goodness, because we drank our own Kool-Aid, as it were, Kool-Aid, and really got going. So we've been plowing on for the last, 480-odd days and completely virtually. It's going fine. We had a graduation of 768 people, I think, over the 19 ceremonies virtually. And that's hopeful. You know, when you see all these people working hard and graduating and the family behind them and all the smiles, you think, yeah, there's something really going on in life that's
How many people have been through the doors of Henley? How many people have you educated in business in Africa? I mean, this is quite an impressive thing to be able to claim.
We have about half of the total students that Henley has globally, and we have operations in Malaysia and Germany in the UK. So we had about 4,500 last year. We'll have about 4,000 or 5,000 this year. So they're coming through, and we started off with 80 or 90, 10 years ago. So, that's what we're doing.
That's fantastic. It's superb to know that this is all happening in Africa. And I mentioned before we brought you on, you're one of those people, you could be anywhere in the world, and you have been all over the world. But you really believe in Africa, and this brings us to hope as a currency. You really believe in this continent, the opportunities it provides, the talent that we have here. Tell me about hope and what role it plays, especially at a time where people are feeling a little less hopeful. People are feeling very let down by what's going on around them, by Corona, by the events of last week in places like Durban. You still are very hopeful yourself. Where do you get that from? And give us an idea of what your secret is.
I don't think there's any magic to it. I mean, I think if you're an educator, you're in a privileged position, because we see people who've come from terrible circumstances. Their families haven't had anything, and they've plowed everything into their kids so they can educate. And then you see them on the screen. They've come up after a year or two or 3 years of hard work. Their whole family sacrificed. And these people are graduating in really good programs. And they thought they couldn't do this. Their families probably thought they couldn't do it. They thought it was out of their reach. And you see people who've just buckled down, the whole family put effort in, and they see their kids graduating in proper qualifications. And when you look behind and you see the families celebrating, and when we have a graduation in Africa, it's hilarious. Because we go to the UK graduations, they're all ever so stiff. But we get to Africa, we've got dancing, we've got people on stilts. In fact, we had, imagine that platform with all the academics. They were all dancing, and they were from England as well. It was just blows your mind, the whole vibe of this sort of liveliness. And I think if you're in education, you just get so much reinforcement about what's possible, what people can do, and they couldn't believe it. And it's totally privileged. I think we confuse education with intelligence. Just because you're educated, people think, I'm supremely gifted. And because you're not educated, you think you're not. And that's so wrong. Our South Africans, they're 85% black, 52% women. They do these sort of exams on the MBA. They're blind assessed internationally with the Malaysians, the Germans, the Chinese, and the Brits. And the South Africans do better than them
in blind assessments. That's very interesting.
So you just got to go, but this is fact. So I don't make this up. You just got to watch. So where do you get hope? I think you've got to watch the little thing.
What do you mean, though?
Look at you guys this morning.
Yeah, obviously, we're all tremendously hopeful people. I mean, look at Bulelo. He's not cynical at all. And Lebang is clearly the opposite. But I'm curious. You say hope is a currency. Now, a currency means we can trade it with each other. A currency means it's a repository of value. And I can see how you make that assessment, but explain it to us in your own words, because maybe many people don't realize what enormous amount of value they're sitting on if they're hopeful people.
Well, I remember a moment in my life, I was absolutely hopeless. I was just sitting in Manchester in my late 20s. I'd sort of come out of being a hippie and all that, and I was sitting there on a gray day, sitting on a bench, saying, life isn't worth living. I've thrown it all away. And I looked up. And this is such a cliche, but it's true as God. I saw an old lady walking across the road, and this bloke came over and helped her across the road. And in that one moment, I remember kindness. I remember what people do. And then you start looking for that. And you see there's so much of it everywhere. We clutter our minds with anxiety and worry and doomsaying. But you just got to look around. There is an equal balance with disaster, with positive things going on all the time. You've really got to notice that. And I think it's a currency, because if you give hope to someone, look, let's do something hopeful now, okay? Mm-hmm. You've got a radio show, fantastic radio show. I've got a business school. Mm-hmm. So I can give scholarships away to people who've done good things. So why don't we give a Gareth Cliff scholarship away to somebody who's got a matric, who's now in their 30s, maybe a returning, you know, mum returning to work, who's done good things away. We say, you can have one of our level 5 programs for free, but you've got to choose them. Okay, there's a little thing of hope. Let's do it. And so I'll commit to that if you will. So let's find somebody.
You're creating creating such admin for me. You know, I'm not a very generous person.
I knew you'd say that. We'll do the admin for you. You find the person, we'll do the admin.
All right. Now we'll set up a little email address and let's do that. I mean, I love it because there are people who are sitting around at the moment and they're hungry for this kind of thing. There's just nothing for them. We live in a really interesting continent and in a really interesting country. And despite all the news, which is by its very nature, news is always negative. News is always designed to elicit a flight or fight response from people, because that's what gets them to click. That's what gets them to subscribe. And really, if you don't appeal to those base natures of people, you miss out on huge audiences. And that's how the media business works. But we have enormous need in Africa. We have enormous opportunity as a result of that enormous need. So you've got people who live in places where there is no electricity, there is no water, there is no infrastructure, there's no internet. And then you've got this incredible hunger, this desire to succeed, which we have more than almost any other part of the world, because people in Africa know what is out there. They know what is possible. And because of that, they're desperate to get there themselves. Whereas people in the first world or the developed world, those people are mostly saturated. They've got a certain level of comfort. They've got a certain level of expectation. And most of them quite happy to just kind of carry on and maintain whatever they've got at the moment. Here, that's not good enough. People have to succeed. They have to achieve. So there's a desire to make it, which counts for more than any amount of talent, right?
Well, I think it does. I mean, the point is we mystify and sort of put talent on a pedestal as if it's something you're gifted with. I'm a huge believer in ordinariness. You know, the ordinary human brain is phenomenal. The ordinary body, the ordinary everything we have, we just somehow think that we've got to be given something extra to be successful. We don't. We've got all the tools we have. So you say hope's a currency, and I think it is. I think it is stuff you can give to other people. But it's also a choice, and it's what a patronizing thing to say of somebody like me sitting in a thatched loft saying to people who've got nothing, you know, hope's a choice. It's not meant like that, though. You know, imagine a life without hope, where it's going to go for you. And so you actually have to choose hope. We have to choose and help each other. Sometimes life is really impossible. But if you don't choose hope, if you don't be hopeful to other people, then we all have no choice at all. You know, nobody, the community doesn't come out after the riots. It's throw their hands up in horror. You know, and hope, you've got to have hope to plan. You've got to have hope to take initiative. You've got to have hope to move anything. So hope is, we live with hope all the time, but the chattering of our minds covers it all up. So in tiny ways, we need to sponsor it in each other and help each other. And I'm not talking from some Pollyannaish religious, you know, perspective on this. Nothing, you know, against religion in any way whatsoever, but it's just a factor of humanity. You have to choose to be hopeful at some point, because otherwise you're not going to go anywhere. And that doesn't mean your life's going to be easy. Of course it's going to be riven with challenge, but that's where it becomes a currency, because when you see somebody else losing it, just give them a hand, man. Just say, okay, come on, just lift each other up a little bit. And you know, life just gets better, but it's still hard, but it's better, you know?
I just have to refer to something Carl says here. I love how John came on with his own elevator music because he's taking you to the top. Because we heard some guitar music in the back there, John, and I think that's such a good point that Carl brings up. Yeah, Courtney says he's got the ambience sorted. Your music has stopped, unfortunately, but I love that. That was very cool. John, when you came on, was that playing in the background? Is there someone with a guitar, or is that just playing on some system?
No, I just love to have guitar music around. I'm an extremely poor guitarist. Okay. And so, you know, I've been trying for many years to play guitar. I played in a band once or twice, and, you know, they were so bad, but it was such fun, you know. Yeah. I would never change that, yeah.
I love it. All right, so when we talk about hope, and you brought up something now, it's very difficult to be hopeful when things are going the way that they are. And I don't just mean in terms of last week's events, which really a bit of a blip on the radar. I mean, you know, we've had mostly, and again, people have a problem with context, John, which you may want to address. People have a problem seeing and hearing what the average setting is, what the default setting is when things get out of kilter. And then they make very bad knee-jerk decisions based on the immediate events, rather than the long term or the short or the medium term assessment of things. So there's that, but there's also this coronavirus, which, let's face it, has thrown even the most powerful nations in the world into disarray. We've got protests all over the world. You've got places like Cuba where people have just had enough. You've got places like China where the government keep on lying to their people and to the rest of the world. We've got the United States where they're printing money as if there's no tomorrow, because some of the people may believe there's no tomorrow. And you've got Boris Johnson changing his mind left, right, and center on what's going on in the UK. It's very hard for people to find a North Star to guide them in all of this. It's very hard for people to find someone they can believe in or something they can trust. Don't you agree? That's where hope starts. You have to have something to aim at.
I think I often think life's a very narrowly balanced line between forces working against and working for, you know, and we tend to dramatize the ones working against, not noticing the ordinariness of people being kind and holding it all together. And I think that is a perception. I think hope requires discipline. Hmm. I think you've got to have discipline. You've got to control your fears. You've got to, or even face them, even better, walk into them. I mean, your mind's screaming at you because it's so terrifying. Take a deep breath, do a bit of meditation or whatever you do. And let that voice chatter away, the screaming parrot in your right ear, you know, that all disaster, and a little meerkat on your left shoulder. And that's cool. Listen to the meerkat a bit more. But you're right. This isn't a trivial issue. You know, to be serious for a moment, there's a wonderful book by Viktor Frankl called In Search of Meaning. And he was, you all know this. It's a story about how he was in concentration camps and who survived and who didn't. The big optimists didn't make it because they were so disappointed so easily. Hmm. The pessimists didn't make it because they couldn't see what the possibilities were. And what he called a tragic optimist, the ones who decided life was worth living, you know, in spite of pain and grief and death and all the things that come with life, those people who nonetheless just stood with it and carried on and felt that life included that and was worth living, they're the ones who survived. And I think there's that sort of level of resilience that comes with real hope. I'm not talking, you know, the preachy type of hope or the fantastic, you know, hope peddlers. I'm talking something quite deep, a real sense of who you are. If you love somebody, you hope, you know, and so we want to love. And so practice that, but don't expect it to come without pain, because it won't, you know, but that's part of the deal. And so you've just got to also, if you're hopeful, you've got to put up with a lot of stuff that's rough. But when you've got people who are authentically hopeless in really difficult situations in poverty, then that's where we have to change the system. We've got to be activists. And I don't think you can sit in comfort if you're hopeful. I think you've got to be hard-hitting. I think you've got to get out there. I think you've got to talk about it. And part of hope is mobilizing people in the right way, not destructive mobs, but mobilizing people to say, we are going to change the system. We are going to stop corruption happening. We're going to stand up against that. I did a youth program on youth this week, and it was just amazing to see these young people talking about how we're going to change the education system, how we want to stop corruption in politics, how corruption damages the poor, and we're going to tell people to understand that. So I think if you're a hopeful person, you don't become dumb. In fact, you know, optimism is often stigmatized. You know, there's research that shows if you're slightly cynical and negative, people think you're more intelligent. Well, that's absolute rubbish. You know, that's the cop-out. You know, if you're properly optimistic, you're properly bright, especially if you understand that comes with something. So be active, get out there. Do what you do. And then if you're older or in a position, then be a leader. You know, if you're going to be a leader or if you're going to speak out on these things, people are going to beat you up. I mean, you must know that.
Yeah.
Like usually. So I think if you're going to be hopeful, you have to work. So that would be my point of view. And the system we live in can be changed. There's no doubt about it. We, you know, even the business system we live in has all these unintended consequences on people. But it's up to us to stand up there and do something. And every time you hear somebody being racist or something, speak up about it. Just say, sorry, that I hear you saying that, but I don't believe that. Just that small voice is saying, nope, that's enough sometimes. Well, you don't have to rant and rage. That's my little philosophy there, Gareth.
Yeah, Lebang and Bulelo, you guys, you know, you've obviously got some things you want to ask John as well, and we've got a bit of time before we wrap it up for this morning. I mean, education is such an important part of this, but that's just one avenue. That's just one area that we can focus on. I like the idea that this is something that's available to everybody at no cost all of the time. It's getting your head right. And I know that discipline, Bulelo, that word appeals to you. You brought it up just yesterday, I think.
No, and I absolutely love the way it's, you know, the this version of hope, because John, you'll forgive me if you are, but I am, I have my sort of skepticism about religion and exactly what you were saying. So I love that you cleared that right up, because I think once you it's not cool to be positive. It's not cool anymore. It's not cool to talk about wanting to probably do the objective thing that we've all agreed on, because I that's because we've got snake oil salesmen or whatever it is. So to have people like you is absolutely incredible. But I just wanted to ask you in terms of education. Do you think we're ever going to head back to probably trying to educate people more holistically? Or do you think now we are just sort of preparing people to go to the sweatshop that we call business, you know? Like just an
Well, I think business... it's changing. I think people understand now you just can't plow ahead making random profits and have consequences on people in society and hold people in poverty as a consequence. You have to think about prosperity for people. So you start reframing business as creating prosperity, and you can start changing the rules and laws. That's happening more and more globally. I do think that education is really changing. I mean, there are many initiatives over the years where people have done more holistic education. But you don't have to think of it as something freaky. Our minds are capable of being analytical. They're also capable of imagination. We don't train imagination enough. But how can you not have imagination and think about a future? You can't just analyze your way to the future, because in a real sense, you create that future. You've got to make choices. You've got to see the future you want and create it. Now, if you do that, you've got to be optimistic. But it's a tough optimism. It's not a sort of optimism that people are going to love you for. You know, it's an activist, tough optimism. You know, if you decide not to break down but to build, you're going to have all the forces who want to break down and hold their power massed against you.
Right.
You need courage. You need real guts. And that's why I love the activist journalists so much. They do brilliant work and put their lives on the line. That's an act of deep communal optimism. We should support them.
And also to be willing to be unpopular, right? I mean, Lebang, what do you think of that?
For sure. I was just going to comment on, we spoke about Jacob Zuma earlier and how he got the go-ahead with regards to you know, getting...
the postponement of...
the postponement. But it was difficult to find that in the news yesterday. If he got rejected, that was going to be everywhere. So generally, I think my takeaway is that things that are more in the negative light are always easy to find. As Mbulelo said, like it's not cool to be cool, to be nice and to be positive. People are generally looking at being depressed as an aesthetic and going through so much as a real thing.
Yeah,
and John, you
like
just mentioned something so important, that hope is a choice. And I'm curious, in as much as it's a choice, like, for some people, it could be subconscious, because we're lucky enough to grow up in the right households with the right environment where we've got these positive influences continuously around us. But what about the hopeless guy? at the bottom, who's living in poverty? What are some of the active, you know, decisions that he or she must make every morning to participate in this choice of hope every morning? I mean, for some of us, it can come out naturally, as I'm saying, great for us, but it's not, you know, it's not the same for all of us. So I'm curious to know, you know, John, what your opinion is for somebody out there who's listening and they're like, yo, screw this, I can die tomorrow and I don't give a rat's ass. Like, what can you say to them to actually choose hope every single day so that they can become better versions of themselves?
Well, there's a guy I know called Welcome Vitboy, and he was in prison for a long time. He was a general of the 28th, I think, and we've given him some scholarships, and he's turned his life around. He's had a really tough time, and he's working with a Bright Spark Foundation, for example, helping young people in the townships, etc., to avoid gangsterism and crime. A person like him is who you should talk to about something like that. When I listen to him, I see him coming to a point where he did go into the darker areas of what he could do, but he made a choice that he wanted to come out of that. And it was a very tough story. He had to ask the other generals whether he could leave the gang. And there was a wonderful story about how he stood there with two other generals behind him holding knives and interrogated by the ones. And they allowed him out of the gangs. The only reason they allowed him out of the gangs is because, as an act of kindness, he taught two of those other generals to read earlier on. Usually they let him out. Now, the point is that there is nothing you can easily say to somebody like that, but there are some things you can do. You can, when somebody comes to your car wanting something from you, instead of turning away and rolling up the window, you don't have to lower the window, especially these days, but look the person in the eyes and at least smile. Yeah. You know, just in tiny ways, keep generating humanity. You know, the fear makes people two-dimensional. We don't see people's humanity. It's terribly scary. So don't let that happen to us. Look at people and just take the pain of not being able to help sometimes, but give some humanity. Often that's enough to help people. Just a little, just being human. You may not be able to give a lot, but my God, you can give just a little bit of equality and normality to people and recognize who they are. And that can really help. And then do everything we can to change the system, because I tell you what, hope doesn't come as a free ride. You've got to move. You've got to fight, man. You've got to fight forever.
Yeah. John, before we let you go, this has been awesome. You said the magic word for me is discipline, and I struggle with it because I'm really an extremist. So I'm probably not a good person to try and teach the message, because I don't have that emotional intelligence sort of to teach. But do you think it's something you can teach, or is it innate? Because to me, I believe there is nothing. I have nothing in my life without discipline, but some people say that's too much. So I say, okay, I know no other life. Can you teach discipline, or do you think it's innate?
No, you have to teach discipline. I mean, it's the whole thing. Self-discipline comes from quite often imposed discipline. You know, good parenting is not about just letting people do everything. And I'm not great at that. You know, I'm sometimes far too liberal in some ways and far too hectic in others. But I think it's absolutely taught. You teach people, you model discipline. Often I think it's caught, not taught sometimes. People follow what you do, show what you do, and show the benefits of it. People are much smarter than we think in some ways, in subtle ways. They'll notice if you're disciplined. They'll notice the benefits as well. And when we talk about discipline, we're not talking about the sort of discipline that crashes you out. We're talking about discipline of not reacting to something terrifying immediately, not losing your temper and being angry. Because when you do that, you lose perspective. You've got no hope really of being rational or helpful or seeing a big picture if you've lost your temper, or if you've reacted, or if you've just hidden in fear. What happens is your peripheral vision narrows down, literally and psychologically, and you see what's in. To be hopeful is to be able to scan the system. And it's horrible, because sometimes you see things you don't want to see. But you have to have the discipline of seeing what's there, facing what's there. And that's another reason I love the sort of shows you do, because, you know, with all the humor and everything you wrap up, you're exposing so many perspectives to people, and you're offering different things wrapped up in humor and care that people need to hear. And it helps people. And I think that's the sort of discipline you need to. And I don't get that you're not a good teacher or something, because, you know, I've been listening to you, and you've certainly got emotional intelligence, young man. So you've certainly got that in huge amounts. So, you know, you could be a great teacher, I promise you.
Yes. Young man, yes. My favorite part of everything you said,
I've always
wanted me young. Yes.
I'd say rarely get the chance.
That's all you ever wanted. Never mind that you could be a teacher and save lives. You are a young man.
Yeah, when you got a gray beard, you can get away with it sometimes, but not often.
Don't you think, though, that there is a bit, because what seems to be coming up as a theme rather a lot this morning is this idea of optimism and pessimism and positivity and negativity. And it does seem to me that there is a bit of a pushback from ordinary people now who are sick to death of all the negative stuff. They're actually actively turning away from the sources of pessimism and negativity in their lives, whether that is government, whether it is the news, whether it is the media, whether it is people who in their life are toxic relationships they don't need to be a part of anymore. It seems to me we're wising up. We're getting better at counting out those influences which are making us feel worse and making our lives a little bit more unbearable. And people are, they're not as easily led by the nose as they might have been before. I mean, we started the show this morning talking a bit about propaganda and talking about the fact that people aren't so stupid. They are starting to see through the smoke and mirrors act that has been put together by big corporations, government, the unions, media, who are all in cahoots, frankly. And they leave most of us. They leave most of us out. Most of us are not playing that game anymore. We can see through it. We're over being sold a bill of goods, which is just not delivering.
Yeah, I get that. And I think that's very true. I mean, it's funny, you know. If we get lots of optimism, it all starts to seem vague and mushy and Pollyanna-ish, and then we start craving a little bit more rigor and discipline and you know, reality, you know, which is often pessimism wrapped up. So we get that reality. So okay, I get the world. And then you get the downside of reality, which is this cynicism. I think cynical people are just passionate people who've been disappointed once too often. Anyway, get all this cynicism. And then everyone wants, oh, give me hope. And if you don't, what you cycle to the upside of hope, the downside of hope, the upside of kind of that. So the thing is to hold yourself from the top, give yourself a sort of a hope and optimism that actually encompasses the stuff around you. Don't make it a refuge. Just make it a choice of the way of living. Because you can't, if you want to learn, learning is based in optimism. You know, it's not like painful learning all the time. If you want to learn, it's because you want to grow yourself. And you've got a sense that by learning, by studying, whatever it is, you'll learn things and you'll see life differently. You'll have more capabilities. And that's very true. And that's why education is so phenomenal. It gives you greater capabilities. It allows you to drive this engine better. It doesn't change the engine size. It was always good. It's just now you learn to drive it. You start to find a whole lot of tricks it can do. You can never believe it. You know, eventually I'll be able to play guitar properly, maybe, you know, but I'm not going to give up, you know, that's for sure. But I think you've got to have this sense of learning and moving. And, you know, on one level, you know, life is going to end badly for all of us. And so in one way, we're all going to pass on. So is there any hope? You know, but I've got kids. I look at their eyes, you know, and they are my hope and everyone else's kids. So why don't we stop thinking about ourselves quite so much and think about what do we want to do for our kids? What's the world we want to leave for them? And work together on this, you know, forget this nonsense that we, so many things that clutter our mind about difference of race, all that sort of thing. There's no science of race that exists. We're all one human race. Why don't we think about the society we want to build and start to visualize that? Now, that's not a weird optimistic thing. That's just plain, simple, good old, healthy planning. Mm-hmm. And let's work at that. And let's stand up robustly against people who destroy that, particularly people who are corrupting and taking hope from youth, because corruption takes hope from youth. It stops people who are talented getting opportunities and gives it to people who can't do it. We have to fight that implacably. And that's when we get tough. And so, you know, optimism is not without its toughness, that's for sure.
I love that. That's a great note to end this morning on. Thank you, John. It's always good to have you on, and you really bring with you buckets of hope and not that the cheesy kind. This is really useful stuff to know. I know that you're practically improving people's lives on a daily basis at Henley, you and your excellent team of people there. And it's always good to check in with you. It feels like far too long since I last saw you, so it's nice to have you on the show this morning. Thank you.
Great. Let's get our scholarship going.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, now I'm going to be flooded with emails. I'm just forwarding them straight to you.
I know. Yeah, do that.
You know, please. You know how much of a philanthropist I am. I just pass it straight on to John. All right, John, thanks so much. Nice to see you.
Good. Thank you very much. Nice to see you.
Good, lovely stuff. And Lebang, what a pleasure to have you on this morning. I hope we'll see you again soon.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope so as well. Thank you so much. It's been awesome hanging out, chatting. Gareth, you asked earlier how old I am.
Mm-hmm.
I will not share that with you.
No, you.
It's rude to ask a woman her age. Surely I should just be going through life believing I'm 20 forever. But it's been dope, man. It's nice to see that within the constructs of what traditional radio has always been and most likely will be for just a little bit more time in South Africa, we can still find a space to say whatever the fuck we want to say and speak the truth against all the bollocks that they shove down our throats and have been shoving down our throats all our lives. We are tired.
I love it.
So this was phenomenal. Thank you so much.
Hell there.
Very nice to have you with us. And we will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early, 6 o'clock. And don't forget, tomorrow being Thursday, we've got the Burning Platform. If you need to recap anything that's been going on, lucky you. It's a podcast, so you can find it on cliffcentral.com. And if you've watched us and listened to us live this morning, don't forget to like and subscribe and all that stuff. And also don't forget Cliff Central Sport with Bulelo later on today. And on his brand new set with all kinds of interesting guests, including Olympians. And the Olympics starts today. So good luck to all the nations participating in that big, crazy situation. And obviously, we hope Japan manages to keep the ball rolling, because the last thing we need is for it to be canceled halfway through. There are people who are talking about that. I don't know whether it's likely to happen or not. Lots of compliments for Lebang, and we'll end it on that. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow. Cheers, everybody.
Cliffcentral.com.